Leslie's a designer and I'm an entrepreneur, but obviously having partners that are industrial designers helping us create these products that we haven't created in the past, and having Neil help us protect these innovations, it's a partnership where the team wins.
Having an idea for a new product is one thing, but getting it to market is a time-consuming and challenging task that few achieve. Harder still is creating a product that is truly unique and becomes iconic, especially when that new item enters a market that's been in existence for decades. In this case, we're talking about beach chairs. Yet the husband and wife team of Greg Besner and Leslie Sue have done just that with their Sunflow brand of beach chairs. Greg is a serial entrepreneur and Leslie is a fashion designer. And they're here on IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield to discuss their story with Paul Metaxatos and Wolf Greenfield attorney Neil Ferraro. Paul is co-founder and principal of Motive, a Boston-based consultancy that designs products and develops brands for companies of all sizes. Paul's recognized within the retail consumer industry as one of the leading authorities in brand-focused product development, having been associated with other iconic brands, including Keurig, Culligan, and Vitamix. Neil Ferraro chairs Wolf Greenfield's Mechanical Technologies Group, and he kicks off today's fascinating discussion.
Yeah, I would like to introduce Greg and Leslie from Sunflow. Sunflow is a new company that is dedicated to bringing luxury beach chairs to the market, and we're excited to have them join us today. I've worked with both of them for a number of years and excited to hear the story that they have developed and is unfolding. And it's really a pleasure to watch this unfold. So I'd like to hear from Leslie about how you started this company and what was the background impetus, and just learn more about how you started it.
As far as the founder story goes, I guess we could start at the beginning, which is probably about 5 years ago now. We were at a beach rental. You know, we do it every year with our daughters, and we rent a great beach house. It's about a block away from the beach. We're doing our normal morning routine. The kids are getting ready and we're going to pack up for the beach. And it was like a comedy of errors. All the kids were screaming and complaining, and we're piling Greg up with all the chairs and bringing umbrellas, coolers, towels, I mean, toys, everything you can imagine. And we were only walking about 3/4 of a block to get there, but it probably took us 45 minutes or something, with the umbrellas opening, closing, things dropping, that kind of thing. So by the time we got there, we very clumsily opened up all our beach accessories, sat down, and the kids, you know, sprinted off to the water to go play. And Greg and I were exhausted, plopped down in the chairs and said, "This was such a terrible experience." And I just looked at him and I said, "There has to be a better way." And looking around us at the beach, you know, we're sitting, it's a nice beach, but, you know, we have some people on the right, they're day trippers. You definitely can see they're probably put a quarter in the meter. They're there for the day with their families or just by themselves. They were sitting and using the same accessories, beach accessories, as we were. And we look to the right, there's a home on the beach and the family's out front, and they're using the same beach accessories as us too. So we were just kind of thinking about how ironic it is that there's no choices. When I look at my bathing suit, on the higher end of bathing suits, a little more expensive, the kids' flip-flops. I mean, we kind of do everything and invest in our beach day, but there was nothing to invest in out there. No options for beach products.
And Sunflow was born.
Greg, I have an idea a day. So Greg really kind of just looked at me and said, "What'd you say?"
I said, "That's a great idea. We should reinvent the beach category."
And I was like, "Really?" So if he says it's okay, then we, you know, kind of take the next steps.
And Greg, I know that you've spent a lot of time thinking about this. You have an entrepreneurial background as well as Leslie in terms of your prior ventures. You both are problem solvers. If you see an issue, you're not just going to simply complain about it, but you're actually going to do something about it. In this case, like you say, Sunflow was born. And from my perspective, seeing the chair, I was excited to see how sleek it is and how easy it is to work. And I saw the story essentially of how this can be so convenient to bring to the beach and actually enjoy sitting in a beach chair, which, you know, it's hard to get comfortable in a beach chair. And this one seems to check all the boxes, which is super exciting. Leslie, thank you for your time. It was a great story. I look forward to continue unfolding the story with Sunflow.
Us too. We love working with you guys.
So Greg, along those lines, meaning to say the luxury market for beach chairs, one of the things that sort of struck us, Paul being a designer of commercial consumer products and myself being the patent attorney, thinking about a portfolio as opposed to a one-off, one of the things that struck us is the style of the chair creating sort of a visual brand. Maybe Paul can lead off and talk to us about what does that mean? What is a visual brand?
Thanks, Neil. We coined a VBL, visual brand language. It is a key attribute. We like to break this development innovation down into, you know, what is unique functionally and what's unique visually. And visually is huge, you know, in terms of that statement that a product creates. People can relate to seeing the kidney grills on a BMW and knowing that it's a BMW. And as a product gets developed, certain attributes come out. Some are functional, some are purely aesthetic, and some combine together really to make it unique. And I would agree with Neil that the aspects of your chair are novel. And it seems to be the byproduct of the utility and the uniqueness of how you approached the design and made it function in a manner that was different and better, that creates a sleek statement. Now you have a statement and a look. And is that something that's an ownable attribute for your brand, for Sunflow, and where do you want to take it?
Thanks, Paul. And Greg, can you talk to the things that make it different? What are the key features of the chair that you recognized early on that could be sort of define the Sunflow chair, both from an aesthetic and functional perspective?
Yeah, as Leslie said, we had this experience where we would go to the beach, not only were the chairs sort of clumsy and not designed to be friendly and also really not designed for a modern customer, right? Things like storing a mobile device or many different drink holders, drink bottle sizes, or even so much focus on the sun where most chairs don't have a sunshade. Right. So part of it was functional and part of it was aesthetic. And we wanted to not only solve for, create a premium choice for consumers to solve for today's problems, but also for the chair to be very beautiful and iconic looking. Sort of the visual branding language for us was to look different than every other chair on the beach, because there are millions of beach chairs sold, but in our opinion, they all look very similar. We wanted to completely reimagine, reinvent it. So there were really two parts. So one was solving for being able to store it and transport it easily. So that was the small chair that could open big. And that was the telescoping frame, the innovation that, Neil, you helped us fast track. We really thought that was important to patent even before we commercialized our new brand and product. And also having the sunshade, the drink holder, the waterproof dry bag, all of those things incorporated, all those accessories being able to incorporate into the chair. So those are some of the functional things. And then, of course, aesthetically, we really wanted to be iconic looking. One, to be different, to give consumers choice. Secondly, to be modern and beautiful. And thirdly, to be iconic, to be something where people just see it, even from the distance. And not only would that help us identify as a unique and different and modern and super premium product, but it would also help when people do try to copy our aesthetic, that if we are out of the box and we create a brand that is very unique and differentiated looking, even if people make some changes to try to copy the chair in look, people will always know that iconic look and shape, that we are the actual brand. At least that was the goal.
I think job well done, because you know that combination is unique, especially from a distance, which I think is really key. Right? Because as you scan the landscape, you know, there's the distance and then there's the up close of working with something. And I think you've really succeeded in creating something that is truly novel. And I'm sure there were tons of challenges getting there, because obviously a new product is a new mechanism and that is the goal, but really the executing on it with excellence is really the bigger challenge.
That's right. Executing is the hard part. And that's where we come in with partners like you, Paul, like you, Neil, who allow some of the expertise that we did not have. We are not beach chair and beach accessories designers and manufacturers, right? So we found great partners. So thank you for your help, because you both played a part.
And I'm sure you're on the supply chain, because the next stage is, you know, hey, we've got a great new idea. We've got a great look. We got a great idea. And then full circle with your contract manufacturer to ensure you can execute with excellence and really make that design come to life repeatedly, you know, and that's again, another big challenge.
It's an interesting point that you raise. I want to come back to some of the features, but one thing that is important, I know that there were some features of the original design that we could have easily gotten patents on, because there it's a new look and it's a new functionality, which is great from a patent perspective. but it would be extraordinarily expensive to manufacture. And so you make a decision, like, do you want that really cool feature at this elevated cost to manufacture, or do you forego that? You know, yeah, you'll be able to get patent protection on that, but from a commercial value perspective, it's not really worth the effort. The point of this is to have the conversations with, you know, the developers, the patent attorneys, the designers, to make sure that what we're, you know, those ownable aspects are actually valuable to own. Getting intellectual property rights secured is not an inexpensive task, and it's time consuming, requires a lot of resources. So you want to be surgical in the approach to what it is we do.
That absolutely resonates, Neil. You know, on the design side, there's a philosophy around, you know, less is more. You could even stretch it and say nothing is most. But in order to achieve the nothingness, the minimalist, a lot has to go into what is there to make sure that what you have is actually executed very, very well. And, you know, if you're changing an industry on the back end in terms of the contract manufacturer making it, there are a lot of steps you have to go through in order to educate the manufacturer on kind of what this new design is so that they can execute. And, you know, historically, we've always seen that to be a challenge. And that's one where you can pivot. You find out what really matters, what resonates, what gets you great protection, gets you great utility. And then, unfortunately, sometimes you have to negotiate a bit. And I assume, Greg, there were some decisions you had to make along the way.
Yes, it's definitely a balance. And actually, throughout our journey, and we'll continue, as we design and develop more products, we consult with Neil and his team to determine what's practical. You could attempt a patent, prosecute every patent. You could do so in every country in the world, obviously, and be completely buttoned up, belt and suspenders, but it's not practical. And it's not economical, right? So we really need to make commercial business decisions. And we do that with counsel and determine what will have the most value for our intellectual property strategy and for a long-term value of our business.
And that's right, Greg. You mentioned the iconic look and then also just balancing that with what's practical. One of the things that we did in conjunction with you is to look at it from not only from the utility perspective, but the design patent perspective. And so the shape of the chair, the sleekness of the legs, all speaking to your visual brand. Like, what makes a SunFlow chair a SunFlow chair? What are the aspects of that look that is going to allow consumers to recognize that product as a high-end SunFlow chair? And some of the things we look at is from a design perspective is, what will be the areas that are likely going to be copied? The sleekness of the legs, the shape of the legs, how it sits on the ground relative to the angles that are used for the chair. On the functional side, one of the key aspects you raised is the telescoping backrest. Like, what about that makes it functional, and how will it be used? So those are key aspects of the iteration process and figuring out what important aspects of the design are valuable to protect. What about patents, though, Greg? You've got marketing expenses, you've got manufacturing expenses, you've got just running a business expenses, and then you've got the sideshow or patenting to protect your design. Why is it important to you to protect the design? Why patents?
First and foremost, our goal is to really be innovative. You know, our category, the beach chair and beach chair accessories category, is about a 100-year-old category. And there really haven't been innovations in my lifetime. I grew up at the beach. I grew up on a little island, little barrier island. And when I go to visit my parents' home that I grew up in, the beach chair is hanging in our garage from when I was a kid.
Right.
Really, it's almost identical. Even the patterns and the colors haven't changed in decades. So our idea and our thought was, if we were to reimagine this, which is always harder to, you know, we could have gone to the same factories, and Leslie's as a fashion designer by background, she could have made some pretty patterns and just put prettier fabric on an existing chair model. But really, we didn't think that was disrupting or innovating this particular category. We really wanted something that was both functional and aesthetically different. As a matter of fact, we looked for stroller manufacturers instead of chair manufacturers because of our telescoping frame, because of the cabling we have to recline the chair. And we recognized that the stroller industry had already gone through this disruption, where when we were kids, people probably bought a stroller at Sears for $20 or $30. And now you can buy a stroller for $1,000, right? So we recognized that people would treat the beach as a similar luxury, where maybe not as important as the children, but the beach is some sort of that well-earned time away in your work-life balance, right? Whether it's camping or beach, going to the beach or going skiing or going fishing. It's sort of one of those things that even if you don't do it all the time, it's sort of time well-earned and people will invest in those hobbies, even if they're just weekend beachgoers or a week or two for a vacation or a rental for some period of time. So for us, we really wanted to be different. And Neil, you mentioned some of those important things. The first was that function to make sure that we could get on and off the beach and store this product easily and have it open, big, and comfortable. The iconic look, right? Having a chair with that had a white powder coating so that it didn't just look like raw aluminum. Having it what we call a railroad shape instead of round, it has, again, that more iconic look. Having these angles that are very different, it does not open or close like a typical chair. It almost makes the frame almost creates an X as opposed to parallel legs from perpendicular to the sand. And then even the cutout, which we pursued and secured design patents for, just the cut of the fabric, the way that it attaches to the chair, the shape of the fabric, all of these things were really to create something that was innovative, unique, and beautiful. And of course, comfortable and functional.
And what about having a patent on this? What does that do for a company like Sunflow?
So the patents were to try to protect all these design and functional innovations. We really felt that we needed to protect ourselves from our larger incumbents, the competitors, the incumbent companies from looking at our designs. If we assumed the best, we assumed we'd have success and that others would try to emulate, what is the saying? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, right? So we figured people would imitate if we had success. So we wanted to protect ourselves in the marketplace. We also wanted to protect ourselves at the factories. Again, we recognize that there are a handful of factories that produce many of the beach products that are imported into the United States and other parts of the world. We even pursued patents in the countries where we manufacture our products, not because we plan to commercialize our products in those countries, but just so that when our factories would do a search and when we're talking to those factories, asking them to sign confidentiality agreements, having them sign agreements they wouldn't infringe on our intellectual property, we wanted to go above and beyond and have patents in some of these countries that we're manufacturing to show that we're serious and that we're planning to protect our intellectual property. Our product is more expensive than the existing products for most of the existing products in the marketplace. So when consumers are buying, we want to make sure they can justify paying a premium. Part of it can be for beauty, part of it could be for function, but yet just another feature to be able to say on our website, our innovations are patented and unique so that they feel they're paying a premium for something that doesn't exist somewhere else. And then, of course, you mentioned I've been a founder of other companies. I've founded two software companies and another product company before Sunflow. And one of the questions that investors always ask is, how do you protect your company? How do you protect your brand? Is there some moat that you're using to protect the things you're developing? Because they love innovation, but if others can just, if we're first in the forest and we cut down the trees and just make it easy for others to follow, then that's not a great investment. If we have some way to protect the investment for our investors, then that also gives just another box for them to check. It's not the first box because they really, I think for early stage companies, investors are looking for teams that they feel are credible and for categories that are opportunistic. But of course, having protection when you're developing a nascent company is also very helpful. So those were really the reasons, right? So it was credibility, it was consumer validation, it was manufacturing production, it was investor buzz. It was really a combination of all those things that make yet another investment in your company worth the investment.
Thank you for that. And one of the things that I think you're being a bit modest is the credibility. And I know that you've showcased this design with Shark Tank and you actually were a contestant and you and Leslie and won. And that's exciting to see that not only is it from my perspective as your lawyer and counselor, but also to recognize that this has a broader appeal through the TV show as it is Shark Tank.
Thank you, Neil. It's funny, the Shark Tank experience, when we first introduced our chair, which was the summer of 2020, the COVID summer, we opened a pop-up store in East Hampton, New York. So we had a chance to show our product to consumers in real time and get their response. And every time we opened our chair, closed our chair, this telescoping frame, that's when jaws would drop and people would say, ooh, ah. And very often they'd ask, wow, have you been on Shark Tank? So we actually, you know, we clearly wanted to make the design unique. We wanted to make the functions unique. But the telescoping frame was really sort of jaw-dropping. And we applied to Shark Tank. There were, I think, 40 or 50,000 companies apply every year. And we were one of, I believe, about 120 companies that were selected and filmed. And I believe that this innovation, the iconic look of the product, the innovation of our function was a big part of the reason why we were selected. Of course, Leslie and I, being a husband and wife team and having our teenage daughters involved in building out our stores and our company, made for a good story, but you have to have a great product too. All wrapped up together allowed us to be one of the few companies that made it onto Shark Tank last year.
That is quite the accomplishment and certainly gets you a lot of eyeballs, which certainly can't hurt sales. And people do love an underdog story as well. So where do you go from here with regards to the design and the innovation? You know, what have you learned from your consumers? I'm sure you've learned a tremendous amount from getting the product on the market and having it in people's hands and having them respond. What are the aspects of the design that, you know, really resonate? Is it the telescoping aspect? And where do you extend? Where do you go from here?
As you can imagine, when you release a new product to consumers, if you release a tall product, there will be some customers that are looking for a short product. If you release a short product, there are people looking for a tall product. So what you do is you collect all that feedback. And as you get more and more feedback, the things that keep coming up rise to the top. And for us, we made this, and Neil, I think you used the term sort of sleek chair. We made a very sleek chair. It's a low slung chair and consumers loved it. But as our population is aging and what we found was our consumers were a bit more mature because our product's more expensive and our consumers that are a little further along in their careers had more discretionary income to buy expensive products like this. We thought 20 and 30 year olds would be buying this sexy product, but actually our biggest customer base is really 40 to 60. So having such a low chair does limit if someone has any knee issues, if they just prefer a chair that's a bit higher up. Some people like to use the chair for spectator sports at their children's soccer or lacrosse, baseball games. So the few things we've learned with regard to the product is one, having another version that's higher, having a version with large armrests so that people can rest their arms. Those are the two things that really rose to the top. And also just people like to sit back and maybe even sleep on the beach. And we didn't have a pillow when we first launched. So that what we introduced this season, and we sold out of the first production run, we introduced what we call our high tide chair. So we took all that consumer feedback over the first few years, and we developed a higher chair with armrests. It has the same telescoping frame and the same beautiful fabrics and the same iconic shape, but it's a bit higher off the sand and has the armrests. So that's our second kind of core product we've introduced. And then with regard to sleeping on the beach, we introduced a pillow. And Neil advised us quite a bit on if there would be some way to protect the innovation because the pillow actually slides very craftily onto our chair and can be adjusted up and down. And even though it's a very simple design, it actually took quite a while for Leslie to develop because, again, she designs everything from scratch. It's not just a piece of foam that's stitched to the chair. It's actually a very thoughtful shape and the contour and the fabric and making sure that it wouldn't get dirty and from sunscreens and wouldn't water from being outside. So that was solving for some of the things that consumers mentioned. And then the irony of all this is that the telescoping frame has been an innovation that we could protect. It's been an innovation that allowed us to, probably a big reason why we were selected for Shark Tank because of the innovation, but it does make the chair more complicated. It makes it more complicated to produce. We have these triggers that allow the chair to recline with just the push of a button, and that requires some cabling. So the chair has a lot of parts. It's a little complicated, like a baby stroller. It has some extra steps, and it's a little heavier than some of our competitors' chairs. So all those things allowed us, besides the weight, all those things allowed us to be innovative and different. But what we're also going to be introducing next season is what we haven't yet determined the name, the marketing name, the branded name. But for now, we're calling it our simple chair. So the simple chair will be a bit higher. It'll have armrests, but it will not have the telescoping frame, will not have the push button fingers for the reclining. It'll be a little lighter and it'll be less expensive. So this will allow a third choice for customers that want a chair that's sort of not too short, not too tall. They still want armrests. They maybe don't have to have a telescoping frame, that they're not transporting it or storing it with any restrictions. So it allows the chair to be lighter less expensive armrests and at an intermediate height. And we think that will solve a big part of the marketplace. It'll still have our iconic shape. It'll have the beautiful fabrics. It'll have the frame will be identical, but we will simplify it so that some consumers that don't need all the bells and whistles don't need to pay for all the bells and whistles.
It sounds like you're taking a page from maybe Tesla's playbook, right? I mean, launch with the show car with all the bells and whistles and then come out with the Model Y or the Model 3. Certainly getting that trickle-down effect is huge. Getting that aspirational product out there, the design, the functionality, then enables you to follow the consumer. And kudos to you for moving quickly, taking advantage of that. You know, you're hot right now, but you know consumers, they are fickle and they come in broad ranges and sizes. I can't say how many times I've heard that an innovative product, whether or not it's something that we've worked on or friends of ours, that they've hit the mark, but there's always something, there's always that but out there, because again, the consumer is so fickle. And really, the enlightened entrepreneurs are the ones that move quickly, really address the addressable market when they can have it. Again, like Tesla, going to that, the thicker, the fatter part of the market, you know, a little bit of a lower price point. A lot of the goods that we do are in more popular price points. You just get the mass volume there, which would be, I think, a terrific success. So what you describe really sounds like a fantastic plan.
Yes, the Tesla comparison is one that I use as well. It's exactly right. It's much easier to go out and market it with a very aspirational product, but it limits the audience, right? Not everyone can afford the most expensive. Many people cannot afford the most expensive Tesla, and many consumers will not pay the super premium price for our first and second chair model. So having a lot of those same beautiful features and functions, but in a scaled down version that doesn't have some of the features that everyone requires, at a price that's a bit more affordable, will still be a premium product. We will still be more expensive than the entry-level price points that many of our competitors offer, but it'll be an intermediate price that we think will close the gap and allow people an easier upgrade.
I think it's a great strategy. And again, it really aligns. It's very, very tough to go up market. It's much easier to go down market once you've established a beachhead.
One of the things that I think that Greg has been very conscious of is bringing in counsel early to make sure that whatever is in the pipeline is patented before disclosure or release. Obviously, we want to protect the innovations and the hard work. And in some countries, if it's disclosed first, we lose patentable protection. So it's important that we maintain our close discussion so that we're on top of any new innovations that are coming out to make sure that they are protected before disclosure. And similarly, making use of the classic example is this mid-market chair, and that is we have a patent on a telescoping backrest. Well, that's not relevant anymore, right? So did all that hard work go away? No, because you complemented that with design patent protection, right? So the shape and the look is all the same. The accessories are also all the same. So protecting the accessories is also important, whether from a design perspective or a utility perspective. So I think that having the constant communication that we have is valuable. It protects you so that you're not making inadvertent disclosures, although somebody like yourself, Greg, you've done this a few times that you know not to do that, but also just thinking about different ways that the designs and the innovations can be protected. When things do change, it's helpful to, again, you know, have the conversation when you're iterating designs so that we're in lockstep. I know that Paul and I have talked about this in the past on how we can stay in lockstep with each other and with the client to make sure that the design changes that Paul makes on consumer products is protected. And similarly, when I work on new patent applications, I'm in touch with Paul to make sure that, hey, is these valuable features, are these important features to protect? Are they manufacturable? Are they commercially valuable? So having that open dialogue is extraordinarily valuable for clients like yourself, Greg, and the Sunflow product.
I would absolutely agree with that, Neil. I mean, this further, you know, we have a constant banter around the sort of the chicken and the egg with design and IP, and they really just work in parallel. You know, you start with something novel conceptually, or is it more the theory behind it, but working closely, communicating often, you know, from the inception throughout the life cycle is really critical with all parties when it comes to design, entrepreneurs, and legal.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Greg, for taking the time to talk to us about the Sunflow story. Thank you, Paul, for your help in being in tune to the consumer product side, the manufacturing side, and the patent side. And we enjoyed working with you, Greg, over the years and look forward to continue working with you. Any final thoughts, Greg or Paul, before we end today's podcast?
So, Neil, thank you for all your work over the last number of years, even before we launched. And as a matter of fact, I remember you sending a photograph of a Sunflow chair on your porch. You were one of our first customers as well. So thank you very much. And then, Paul, we talked a lot about our chairs today, but our plan here is to be a beach brand, not a chair brand. And we've invented or created things like a sunglass holder that attaches to our chair that we call
it.
And we've created a pillow I mentioned. We have a waterproof speaker now that we've introduced. We have a solar charger that'll be attaching to our chair. So our innovations continue. And Paul, thanks to you and your team for helping with some of those innovations, because Leslie's a designer and I'm an entrepreneur, but obviously having partners that are industrial designers helping us create these products that we haven't created in the past, and having Neil help us protect these innovations. It's a partnership where the team wins. So we appreciate you being on our team.
Our pleasure. It's always great to chat about this kind of stuff. And we look forward to more and watching the sales grow.
Fantastic. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Our thanks to Greg Besner, Leslie Sue, Neil Ferraro, and Paul Metaxatos for discussing the Sunflow success story here on this episode of IP Talk with Will Greenfield. We hope you'll subscribe to our series of conversations related to IP matters on Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. For more information on legal matters related to IP, we invite you to visit our website at www.wolfgreenfield.com. Thanks again for joining us on this edition of IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield.